Starwalker Studios presents The Obsidian Monolith, creating an original campaign for Numenera.
Numenarian, and welcome to the fifth episode of The Obsidian Monolith. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I'll talk about the town of Bonespur, a small logging town on the edge of the Westwood in Navarine. This is where the campaign will begin and will serve as a home base for the PCs. So grab a pen, grab some paper, and get your creative juices going. It's time to create an adventure. So as promised, today I am going to be talking about the town I came up with. I already talked about this a little bit in one of the previous episodes, but I wanted to touch on it just a little bit more today to kind of set the stage for what we're doing today. And that is the topic of themes. And as I said before, when I talked about this, this is very early in the process to even be thinking about themes. Usually I allow themes to come out organically, and after I've run a few adventures in a campaign, or even quite a few adventures in a campaign, some themes will begin to suggest themselves just naturally, and then I will try to work to bring those out more in the future. However, in this particular campaign, as I shared with you before, some themes started coming out almost right away. Once I decided I was running this in Navarine near the Westwood, and I started looking at what was going on in Navarine and what was going on in the Westwood, and I started getting some ideas for what I wanted to do in the first few adventures, I had some themes just kind of jump out at me. So I'm not going to ignore them when they happen. So since they're there and they're wanting to be used, I will try to use them. I also, at this point, I have quite a few ideas about the Obsidian Monolith itself, but I'm not really worried about nailing it down, because I'm thinking the Obsidian Monolith may very well be the climax of the entire campaign. So this is way in the future, and although it is a good idea to start thinking about it and start tossing ideas around, I don't really need to know much about that right now, because it's so far ahead. So it's way on, you know, over the horizon. But I do have some ideas, and I am thinking about that. But for the podcast right now, I think I will save that for a future episode, if only to prolong spoiling it for my players as long as I can. But for now, it's enough for us to know that it's somewhere either in Navarine or perhaps in the Cloud Crystal Skyfields, and this is something I want to aim for eventually in the campaign. This is taking place, the beginning of the campaign, as I said, in Navarine near the Westwood, and I talked about before, you know, what's going on with the Kalovas, who dominate a large part of the Westwood. It's where they live. It's their homeland. They very jealously defend it from humans wanting to come in and log the forest. And I had this idea of, you know, it says in the core book that in this area on the eastern edge of the Westwood, there are a lot of these small logging towns, because redwood trees grow in the Westwood, and redwood is valued throughout valued throughout the Steadfast as a trade commodity. It's very beautiful wood to make things like furniture out of. And just like in our world, you know, redwood trees don't grow just anywhere. They need very specific ecosystems with specific amounts of moisture in the air in order to grow and thrive. So you can't just find them anywhere in the Ninth World. And so it's kind of rare. And as you probably know, anytime something is perceived to be rare, it tends to be valued more just for its rareness sake. The Westwood is also a source of other types of lumber. So there are these towns that basically make their living by lumbering. Lumbering, is that a word? Can you verbify lumber? I don't even know if verbify is a word. I'm just raping the English language today. Hope you're not offended. So I thought it would be fun to kind of play with this and to come up with a small Navarrene logging town on the edge of the Westwood. And because I want to bring out this conflict between the Kalovas and the humans, and I want to kind of put a twist on it, and I would prefer that the PCs not look at this like, you know, the Kalovans are evil monsters and, you know, we need to drive them out and take the Westwood from them. I would much prefer it to either be the Kalovas, I always want to call them Kalovans. The Kalovas are seen as protagonists, or at the very least have it be this kind of gray where it's kind of up to the PCs to decide whether they view the Kalovas as antagonists or protagonists. And, you know, being an anthropologist and someone who studied anthropology and history a great deal, of course, right away comes to mind the horrific things that were done by the European settlers of what is now the United States to the native peoples of these lands. And there's a, you know, obvious parallels to be drawn there. And so me personally, that's a theme I'm interested in. It's something that I want to play with. And it's also something that I'd like to make people think about if I can. So because of all that, I thought, hey, it'd be cool to have this small logging town actually have somewhat of a relationship with the Kalovas. And I want it to be tenuous, and I want it to be the beginnings perhaps of something better. And what I'm thinking is this town, perhaps there's someone in the town who has learned the Kalova language and can communicate with the Kalovas. And there's kind of this uneasy peace between the people of this logging town and the Kalovas of the nearby tribe in that part of the Westwood. And basically, you know, the leaders of the town and the leaders of the tribe have gotten together and they've kind of come to an agreement where the humans have agreed to only log in certain areas and the Kalovas have agreed to basically leave them alone as long as they stay in those areas. Because if you're familiar from the core book, basically what's going on in the Westwood right now is people from Navarrene are trying to log in the Westwood, you know, to have lumber for trade. And the Kalovas are constantly raiding them and attacking them because they don't want these humans taking over their lands. Sounds really familiar for us Americans, right? So that's kind of the climate and the environment of what's going on. So I think it would be fun to have this town where they, instead of just warring with the Kalovas, they've kind of made this uneasy truce and this kind of gentleman's agreement with the Kalovas in that area. But again, this is a very localized thing. This is this one little town with this one little tribe of Kalovas that's nearby. And, you know, this is not the norm. You know, most of the human peoples and the Kalova peoples are fighting each other. And I like having it be kind of tenuous and just the beginnings of a relationship because, A, that's good fodder for story because there's lots of potential for conflict there because, you know, things could easily go south or things could get better. And B, because I'm hoping that the PCs may step in to the situation and have an impact one way or another and decide to either, you know, make things better between the human people and the Kalova, or maybe even make things worse. So I like setting up a situation where everything's kind of in flux and it's this very, you know, it's at this tipping point so the PCs can come in and have an impact and change the world and see that change happen. I also, as I said in the previous episode, I'm really interested in the Emal family, which is one of these aristocratic families in Navarine that has a lot of wealth and power. And they are involved in this logging, and they have this massive logging machine called either the Dark Smoker or the Black Smoker. I don't remember. It's in the core book. And they have this Numenera logging machine that I believe it says it can log in a day what it would take 100 men to do, or women, 100 people to log. And this thing is described as basically being held together with bubble gum and baling twine. You know, it's constantly breaking down. They have all these technicians and nanos there at all times to like keep the thing running. And the book describes how the Kalovas are constantly attacking this thing, trying to destroy it. I mean, obviously it's doing the logging that it would take 100 people to do. So this is a huge threat to the Kalovas. And in response, Chirina Emal, the head of the Emal family, has put a bounty on the Kalovas. She pays 10 shins per Kalova head that is brought to her. So, you know, I want to do something with this conflict between the humans and the Kalovas. And right here, this is a point of conflict right here. This machine, you know. And these people that are basically saying, hey, go kill Kalovas and bring us their heads, and you know, we'll pay you $10 now in, or 10 shins. Now in American history, you know, this was very common in like colonial days where there would be bounties, or not really bounties, but people would pay for furs. Like you had trappers who made their living, you know, going out in the, you know, unclaimed wilderness, well, unclaimed by Europeans, I should say, wilderness of the United States, and trapping animals and skinning them. And then they would sell their furs and make good money that way. So this is kind of similar, only we're talking about a bounty on the heads of a sentient people. These aren't just dumb animals. Okay, I'm really tempted to go on a tangent about animals, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to go there. It's not what this podcast is about. Down, Lex, down. Okay, so it's from our, you know, humanocentric perspective, it's very different if you're talking about sentient people that are like us as opposed to animals that aren't like us, because that's how we roll. So this is really interesting, right? And this is a point of conflict. And I think another interesting twist to this, it isn't really pointed out in the core book, but I think it's pretty obvious when you think about it, is you have this one family with this machine that's, you know, doing what it takes 100 people to do in a day. And we're told about all these small towns, these small logging towns, which probably I would think a small town, in my mind, a small town is not fielding 100 loggers to log every day, right? So basically this machine can outproduce one of these towns easily. This is what I have in mind for my setup. I have this small logging town. You know, they've got this uneasy peace with the Kalovas. I let the PCs play with that for a while. I let them meet the Kalovas, get their own opinion about the Kalovas, maybe, hopefully, take some steps themselves to try to improve relations between the people of the town and the Kalovas. And then I have the Emals come on stage with this dark smoker machine of theirs kind of encroaching on the territory of this town. And this creates all kinds of problems. For one thing, it endangers the agreement between these people and the Kalovas, because the Kalovas don't necessarily understand that this is an unrelated group of humans and that they're not bound by this agreement. And this machine comes in and starts logging areas that's outside of what's been set aside for the humans to log. So this threatens the relationship between the humans and the Kalovas in that way. Also, these Emals are paying bounties for Kalova heads. So now you have other humans in the area now hunting this tribe for the bounty. And maybe some of the more unscrupulous people in the town hunting Kalovas for the bounty, despite the agreement that their town elders have made with the Kalova elders. And you also have conflict with the people of the town whose livelihood, you know, the whole economy of this whole town depends on their logging industry. And you have this family coming in with this machine that can outlog them, no sweat, and basically take all the lumber in the area. So there's nothing left for them to log, and there's nothing left for them to log outside of or within their little area that they've agreed with the Kalovas to log, that they can log. So there's all kinds of conflict between the people of the town and the Emals, conflict between the Kalovas and the Emals, and conflict between the people of the town and the Kalovas. So this is a great just powder keg of conflict to throw at the PCs and see what happens. So I'm really excited about all this. I'm liking these ideas, and I think this is a great way to bring out my theme of, you know, the humans taking over the Kalova lands. And we also kind of have this thing of the kind of common folk versus the nobility of this family who, you know, it's like the conflict of the industrial age and even our modern age of, you know, places like Walmart versus small businesses, like that kind of thing. You've got that same kind of thing here because you've got this machine that can do what it might take two or three of these villages to do. And it's just going to take all the lumber and take the food out of the mouths of all these common people. And what are the PCs going to do about this? I'm really curious. Also, I highly doubt that the Emals are planting new trees to replace the trees that they log. I highly doubt that they're only logging dead trees or dying trees or, you know, or the trees like, I think here in America, I think it's pine trees that grow really fast. So they're better things to cut down because they're more quickly replaced than like an oak tree. I doubt that they're leaving any trees standing. I'm sure that this machine just cuts a swath through the Westwood and leaves nothing, you know, standing in its path. And so there's also the ecological impact of them devastating this forest. And what is this going to do to the ecosystem? What's it going to do to the weather? What's it going to do to the wildlife? What's it going to do to the people in these towns? Not only because they don't have trees to cut down to make a living, but it's also going to impact the wildlife and their food source. And also, how's it going to impact the Kalovas themselves as the forests are disappearing? So there are a lot of lines being drawn here. And will the PCs take a stand? And if so, where will their loyalties lie? As I mentioned before, another theme I'm really interested in with this campaign is the Order of Truth and their crusade against the Gaians. Is the crusade by the Amber Papacy to keep the Nine Kingdoms together moral and just? I think you know what my opinion is on this, but there's varying opinions, I'm sure, as there are in all things. Does this undermine what the Order of Truth is, or does it reveal what people think the Order of Truth is a lie? And I'd like to bring this out by having an Eon priest in the logging town and having this priest disagree with the Pope's policies. He disagrees with the Crusades. He disagrees with what the Order is doing and why they're doing it. And so he eventually, I think, in the story, is going to withdraw from the Order and become an independent. And what are the ramifications of this for his town? Because presumably, you know, the Order isn't going to let him just do his thing in this town in Navarine if he's no longer associated with the Order. They're going to want a priest there who's under their thumb. Perhaps he ultimately has to leave and find an Aldea in the beyond to take care of or live at or be his home. And this might be a way to get the PCs out of the Steadfast and into the beyond if that's something I decide I want to do in the future. So again, just to, some of this might be recap, but just some interesting things about Navarine that's going to be relevant for coming up with my town here is the south of Navarine is rich farmland. There is this hierarchy within Navarine where we have the queen on top, and then underneath her we have a small number of aristocratic families. And beneath these families, we have wealthy landowners. And then beneath them, we have the simple farmers and herders. The north of Navarine has forts along the border with the Cloud Crystal Skyfields, protecting that border with the beyond. We also have, as kind of a side note, we have this thing going on with the queen of Navarine wanting the other countries of the Steadfast to help her man these forts and protect her border and the border of the Steadfast itself from the Cloud Crystal Skyfields because of the Crusades. And I talked about this in a previous episode, how there's kind of this conflict because the other leaders of the other countries don't think that they should have to fund Navarine's military. As far as the Westwood itself, we've got along the eastern edge many mills that supply lumber, which is a major export of this area, especially the redwood. We've got the Emals, and so that's kind of our setup. So the next step is to develop this logging town, and this will serve as a home base for the PCs in the beginning of the campaign, and will serve to root them within the Ninth World. And for a new player to the game, this is going to be their first exposure and introduction to the Ninth World. So there's some things I want to accomplish with this town. I want it to be an interesting place, but I want it to be a place where the players can feel comfortable and feel at home. I want it to be a place that grounds them in the setting and grounds their characters in the setting. So often in role-playing games, we have player characters who are just murder hobos, right? And they don't really have a past or a tie to anyone or anything beyond their adventuring party. And so this is a way to have the players have a hometown that they all came from, that they can all relate to, and give that foundation to their characters of, this is where I come from. This is the kind of people that I came from. And, you know, the PCs don't have to be from this town originally. They could have traveled there. Part of what I asked from my player starting out is that you are either from this town or this area, or you've at least been there for some time, say at least a month or so, long enough that you've gotten to know some people and you've kind of settled in. But they don't have to be from there. But I think it's very easy for a new player to just say that their character is from there and start to build their identity around these people. Again, I want there to be one Eon Priest in the town so that the players have a connection to the Order of Truth. And even though in the Steadfast there probably would normally be more than one Eon Priest, I just want there to be one because this is a really small, tight-knit town. It's kind of, you know, out on the, not really on the frontier, but it's out in the middle of nowhere. I guess anything that's not a big city is out in the middle of nowhere in the Ninth World. But it's just not a glorious place for an Eon Priest to be. And there's just not much going on. You know, it's like a small country town where nothing happens kind of thing. And also it just kind of simplifies it for the GM and the players starting out to just have this one NPC that's, you know, the representative of the Order of Truth in this town. And it also helps me, you know, really bring out the fact that this particular Eon Priest does not agree with what's going on with the Order of Truth. And especially if I have new players who don't know anything about the Order of Truth, or maybe I have players that aren't new players and they've kind of bought the propaganda about the Order of Truth, or maybe they've played under another GM who runs it more like the Order of Truth are these goody two shoes, you know, for the love of science kind of guys, to show them that at least in this campaign, that may not be the case. Or at the very least, there's good reason to wonder if that's the case. And also, because this is Numenera, I need to have some weird and interesting things about the town. It can't just be a normal town. And so kind of what I'm thinking is going to work for this town, because of all these things that I want, is I think I'm going to make the town pretty mundane and pretty much, like, I'm thinking like an Old West kind of town, right? And have it be that kind of familiar, you know, old small town, and then throw in a few weird things to kind of really show that contrast and to give new players a lot to kind of hold on to and anchor them as far as things that they're familiar with, but also have some things that are really different to show them that, you know, this isn't just your normal old time town. One thing that I always recommend if you're trying to come up with something in the Ninth World is, like I said, you want some weird things and you want some interesting twists to whatever place you're coming up with. There are lots of cool ideas in the Numenera core book in one of the back storytelling chapters or game master chapters. There are suggestions of things you can do in various types of places, like in a city or a small town or out in the wilderness. So definitely check those out. Also, a very highly recommended supplement to the core book is the Glimmer Injecting the Weird. And this Glimmer has all kinds of lists of weird things for various places. So you can go to the village or small town list and go through there and find a weird thing that you like, or just use that for some inspiration for something weird of your own creation. So one idea I liked for this particular town is that this town is built among the fossilized bones of some huge unknown creature from a previous age. And what I'm picturing right away is like a rib cage. So there's this partially buried rib cage. So there's these big ribs coming up, curving up into the sky, stories upon stories tall, fossilized bone. And the town itself is nestled within this rib cage. And some of the buildings are actually using one of these ribs for a support or whatever. Of course, the townspeople don't think anything about this. They don't even look at it twice because they were born and grew up and lived there their whole lives. And, you know, it's just like seeing a tree outside your window. It's no big deal. But for someone coming in from somewhere else, this is kind of weird. And of course, they're wondering, well, what was this thing? It was gargantuan. What was it? Who knows? So because of this, one of my hardest things when coming up with anything is coming up with a name for it. You know, I could just come up with some crazy made up word that sounds weird, like, you know, a lot of places in Numenera or other role-playing games you might play. But because I came up with this original idea of these bones of this gargantuan beast surrounding the town, I thought it would be fun to try to come up with a word or a name for the town that kind of reflects that, because I think it would, if not common, be not unheard of for a town to be named after some local phenomenon or some landmark. That's definitely the case in our world. So I started out with the idea of calling the town Bone Spire, but I figured, you know, this is a group of people that are very separated from the rest of the world. They probably have their own little dialect of the truth. Not to say it's like an actual different language, but just they speak a little bit differently. Just like if you go in different parts of the U.S., you know, people can speak very differently, even though it's all the same language, supposedly. Some of them you wonder. But so I decided to call it Bonespur, which is maybe just how they say Bonespire, or maybe over time the name just kind of shifted from Bonespire to Bonespur. So Bonespur is the name of my town, and I came up with some other weird things and some other things about the town. I will just share with you some of what I came up with about the town of Bonespur. Bonespur is a small logging town located near the terminus of the Fellwood River a tributary of the Tithe River, which forms the northern border of Navarine. It's an interesting bit of trivia that, according to those knowledgeable in such things, the waters of the Tithe should flow into the Fellwood, but instead, the waters of the Fellwood flow into the Tithe. This quirk of nature is used to great profit by the people of Bonespur, as they use the Fellwood to transport their lumber to the Tithe. A canal stretches from the terminus of the Fellwood into the eastern edge of the Westwood. This canal, called Heartsblood Canal, or just the Heartsblood by the people of Bonespur, was built ages ago and is lined with some unknown metal that never corrodes. Loggers from Bonespur travel to the Westwood every morning. They wear float jackets and bob along the Heartsblood, propelled by Numenera devices. These same devices are then used to propel the rafts of lashed-together logs the loggers bring back every night. These same Numenera tug devices allow the lumber of Bonespur to be propelled up the Tithe all the way to Charmond. Lumber is also sent downriver along the Tithe to Harmouth, where it is either used in Harmouth's paper industry or is traded all over the Steadfast. And Harmouth is a town that is detailed in the Devil's Spine adventure. If you would like to use Harmouth in your campaign, you can find out more about that in the Devil's Spine. Unlike other logging communities along the eastern edge of the Westwood, the loggers of Bonespur have not had their efforts foiled by raids of the native Kalovas, because an uneasy peace has recently been established between the Kalovas and the people of Bonespur. This is due mainly to the efforts of Father An, an Eon priest who lives in the town. The most distinguishing characteristics to a first-time visitor of Bonespur is the gargantuan petrified bones that arc up into the sky. Indeed, the entire town is nestled within a buried ribcage of some long-extinct colossal creature. Many of the structures in the town are positioned to take advantage of the shade these huge natural edifices provide. The people of Bonespur are honest, down-to-earth folk. Although they often seem a bit standoffish to outsiders, they are friendly and neighborly to those they're familiar with. Their attitude is understandable once one sees how they're often derided by visitors to the town, and the people of Bonespur have an unfortunate, if accurate, reputation beyond the borders of their town. Simply put, they stink. The distinctive odor one often smells in the vicinity of a native of Bonespur, and indeed it seems to permeate the town, is a pungent, garlicky, oniony smell. This scent is not genetic, but is rather the result of Madame Sadle's wondrous soup, which almost all the townsfolk consume on a daily basis. The soup is made from a variety of secret ingredients, roots, herbs, and spices that can only be found in this area of Navarine. The recipe is a closely guarded secret known only to Madame Sadle herself. The soup tastes as strongly as it smells and is an acquired taste, but the Bonespurans say that once you get used to it, the taste is quite delicious. Not only does the soup taste good, the odor its imbibers emit keeps away all sorts of blood-sucking pests common in this area of the Westwood and surrounding areas, various species of mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and chiggers. This benefit is invaluable to the loggers and farmers of Bonespur and makes their work far less miserable than it would be otherwise. Another oddity in the town is a merchant, Crail Soult, who sells a strange plant he presumably finds somewhere in the Westwood, although no one knows where. This plant glows with a strong light as long as it's alive, light equivalent to that of a glow globe. What's more, the plants are easily cared for, not needing soil at all, but extracting their needed water and nutrients from the air as long as it's humid enough. Although, Crail recommends floating the plants in water for an hour or so once every week to maximize their lifespan and health. Crail doesn't sell the plants for cheap, but those who can afford them say they're well worth the price, 20 shins each. The house and other buildings of Bonespur are all made of wood. They range from simple log cabins to large manors with ornately carved posts and walls. Madam Sadle's Inn, the Logger's Rest, which is the social hub of the town, is just such a manor, and a visitor can spend hours admiring the seemingly endless carvings artfully covering the many wooden surfaces. The people of Bonespur are largely self-sufficient and produce all their own food, including a surplus that they trade along with their other exports. The town is surrounded by small farms, and almost all residents of the town itself have herb and vegetable gardens. There are herders as well as farmers who live near the town, and they provide meat, milk, and cheese. The main exports of the town are lumber and crafted wooden items such as furniture, wagons, etc., as well as all sorts of wooden carvings. The people of Bonespur burn their dead on funeral pyres. So that's a bit of what I've come up with for the town. And as you see, there are a few weird things kind of sprinkled in there. Some of those are ideas I got from the Injecting the Weird Glimmer. Some of them are ideas I got from the core book. Some of them are just weird things I came up with myself. And again, this is just a starting point. And you know, that's how it works. You start out with a basic idea for something. You've got an image in your head and you go from there. And as you run sessions in your setting, you will often come up with things on the fly. And what I recommend is at the end of the session or even during the session that you write those things down and add it to your setting material. And that is how your setting can grow and deepen and become more multidimensional as time goes on and you spend more time with it. All right. Well, I think that that's a good place to stop for this week. That's a good stopping point. And we will continue the discussion on the next episode of The Obsidian Monolith.
Coming up next on The Obsidian Monolith.
On episode 6 of The Obsidian Monolith, I will go on to talk about the first adventure of the campaign. I came up with a discovery in the Westwood for the PCs to explore. So I will tell you about that, and I will share some of the encounters I came up with and some of the NPCs of the town. Well, that's going to wrap up Game Master's Journey. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Please go find me on Google+. You can just search for Lex Starwalker. And please join the Game Master's Journey Google+ community. You can find a link to it on our website at starwalkerstudios.com in the Game Master's Journey show notes. And please follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1. And again, please visit our website, starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find the show notes for this show. You can find helpful links to our Google+ community, and you can also find our other podcasts that we put out. So once again, I thank you for joining me on my journey as a game master, and I look forward to coming back next week. So until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.